This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. The latest report on child well-being in Michigan finds more children are living in poverty, and there is a wide variation in poverty rates based on race and ethnicity. Alicia Guevara Warren is the Kids Count in Michigan Project Director for the Michigan League for Public Policy. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you.
Let's start with the big number of poverty here. There is a 15% increase in the number of children living in poverty in Michigan between 2008 and 2015. Now, I think if we look back at 2008 and compare it to 2015, we would say the economy was probably better 7 years later. So what does that increase in child poverty tell us?
You know, I think that's a really great point is, you know, we're using 2008 as kind of the last year of the Great Recession as our base year for comparison, because we do hear a lot about how the economy is improving. But I think when we look at, you know, the poverty numbers, we can see that, yeah, it might be improving for some, but we're still leaving a good number of people behind in this recovery. What we found when we really get in and dig into the numbers is that, you know, higher poverty rates exist for children of color and children who live in rural counties, although poverty has increased at a higher rate in urban areas. So when we look at the poverty rate, as you said, you know, it increased by 15%. We have more than one in five kids in 2015 in Michigan living in poverty. But that number is up to 47% for African-American kids and 30% for Latino kids, compared to 15% of white kids. And again, when we look even deeper at the disparities by place, we know that those numbers also change. And so when we look at kids who are living in rural counties in Michigan, 28% of them in rural counties are living in poverty, 24% in some of our more mid-sized counties, and then 22% in our urban counties are living in poverty. So we know that these are some of the things that really kind of impact outcomes for kids, and we need to really be looking at those different variations.
I think some people might find a little juxtaposition there kind of interesting in these numbers. When you talk about poverty in rural areas, you know, poverty breaking down by race, because, you know, there's an assumption, I suppose, that minorities are going to be more concentrated in urban areas. So you would expect maybe the poverty rate to be a little higher there. But you're also finding that in rural counties, there is a pretty high percentage of children living in poverty, right?
That's right.
What might explain how those numbers break down? And I guess I'm wondering, you know, is there also something in there about the services that are available?
Absolutely. So one of the things that's really important is, you know, we find in when we're, you know, comparing urban counties and rural counties is many of the same problems exist. But you're right, like the way that we have to address services and program delivery are very different because the barriers are also going to be different. For example, when we start looking at some of the health indicators for people who live in rural counties, we know that transportation becomes a pretty significant barrier because a doctor or a hospital might be pretty far away from somebody to get to who may not have a vehicle as well. So that's an issue that we see in rural counties. I think the other, on the flip side, when we look at urban counties, we talk about concentrated poverty being fairly high. That's where we have 30% or more of kids living in poverty in one neighborhood or census tract. Here in Michigan, we have some of the highest rates for children of color. It's actually the highest in the country for African-American kids and the top five for Latino kids. And we're, you know, at about 17% of our kids are living in these high poverty neighborhoods, which really does have an impact on job opportunities, access to, you know, green space and, you know, healthy living and safe neighborhoods. And so all of these things, you know, they are different, but they do impact how kids are able to develop and how their outcomes are.
If we look around at the numbers in Southwest Michigan, Kalamazoo County is at 47th, Calhoun County 66th for child well-being, Van Buren County 54th, St. Joseph County 75th, and then the best counties in our region, apparently Allegan and Barry counties, Allegan's 18th and Barry 8th for child well-being, according to the latest Kids Count report. But if we were to just go and do a deeper dive on those numbers, is what we're likely to find that those numbers probably correlate with the demographics that we've been talking about in terms of, you know, racial breakdown, ethnicity breakdown, that sort of thing?
So what we really look at, like when we take a map and we look at the overall child well-being, which is really an index of 15 different indicators across 4 different areas: economic, security, health, family and community, and education. So we're looking at, you know, the whole child perspective here. What we find is, you know, areas that tend to have, you know, more resources, higher incomes, accessibility to, you know, services and better schools, those kinds of things all kind of interplay, because we know that, you know, poverty is really interconnected with health. It's interconnected with how a family is able to deal with toxic stress, living in a community that may not have the resources available. And then also it has a huge impact on education, because if you don't have the resources that you need, if you're hungry, if parents are working 2 jobs, they might not be able to be as engaged. And so it also has impacts on education. So we find that there is a correlation with, you know, resource across what we can consider to be overall child well-being.
Let me highlight a couple of factors in this report. Nearly 20% of mothers report smoking during pregnancy, with higher rates in rural communities, and 31% of mothers did not receive adequate prenatal care throughout their pregnancy. Those two things kind of stand out because it indicates that children are already feeling some of these effects before they're even born, that mothers are not getting prenatal care, that some of these things for children start while they're still in the womb.
Absolutely. I think that's a great point. And so we look at, you know, what's going on, what's keeping, you know, mothers from being able to access their prenatal care to ensure what we call, you know, a healthy birth, you know, because education and health and all of these things really do start from a healthy mom, that healthy birth, and really that those very early years in a child's life are very important to longer term outcomes. So their experiences with poverty, their experiences with being able to go to a doctor and have their well child visit, all of these things really do matter for long-term adult well-being, and then again as parents. And so it all kind of cycles back. So it's a very important point. And I think when we talk about how we can improve, you know, education, for instance, third grade reading has been an important priority for the legislature and our policymakers in trying to make Michigan a top 10 in 10 state in education. We really need to think about how, you know, third grade reading is actually impacted by a healthy mom and a healthy birth, and really using that birth to eight framework to really understand a child's development trajectory.
And there was an increase in the rate of confirmed victims of child abuse and neglect by 30% from 2008. Over 80% of those incidents were due to neglect. One question I suppose I do have about the number on childhood abuse is, you know, can those numbers vary because of reporting? If reporting, you know, in other words, gets better, which, you know, is one of the things we talk about a lot with a lot of, you know, criminal activity, and as well as perhaps the ability to investigate and confirm that abuse and neglect has happened.
I think that's absolutely correct. So what's happened is there's been a number of policy changes over the last handful of years that have really moved to a system that allows for more suspicion of abuse and neglect to be reported. And so what we did find in the data is that we are seeing more, there are more calls, there are also more investigations happening for suspected abuse and neglect. So on the one hand, you do, you know, somewhat expect for the confirmed victims to also rise. If you're having, you know, more investigations, you are going to catch some of those. But I think it's still concerning that these numbers are increasing by quite a bit. And when we look at some counties, you know, Kalamazoo in particular, the ranking is 74 out of the 82 counties that were able to rank and confirm the victims. And we see that the rate is quite a bit higher than the state average. And so it just, it, you know, it really varies by community what's going on. And I think what we're trying to do when we provide these county profiles is kind of a snapshot of what's happening in the community. And it's really, you know, the first step in trying to understand what the priorities should be, because then, you know, you want to take a deeper dive into what those numbers actually look like and what they mean in your community.
Certainly, it's better to know that this is going on. At the same time, that number is pretty disturbing, isn't it?
Absolutely. And so it makes us wonder, you know, we want to take a deeper dive, like I said, into trying to really understand what's going on. But we know that when we try to connect it back to other policy changes, we've seen, you know, some reduction in prevention funding for the prevention of child abuse and neglect. And so that's, you know, a major issue. Over the last couple of years, the state has started to reinvest in some of those services. So hopefully that'll help some. But, you know, there was a time period there where, you know, the state was under a lot of budget pressures and cut a number of programs, some of that being programs that were around prevention.
If you had to pick one data point in this report that stands out to you as maybe being the most alarming or disturbing about children in Michigan, what would you say that is?
You know, for me, it is the children living in poverty. When we look at that number, you know, and seeing that, you know, we still have many children after the Great Recession living in poverty, if we look at trend lines over time, you know, it's really stagnated. It's not getting much better. Even in the last couple of years, we're seeing just very small reductions in poverty. And, you know, once, like I said earlier, you know, poverty is really connected to health outcomes. It's really connected to education and to a number of things that can really impact a child's life over the long run.
And if someone were looking for a piece of good news out of the numbers, is there something you can direct them to?
You know, nationally, Michigan has done a good job in our health indicators. Those are some of our best areas. When the National Kids Count Report comes out every summer, we see that, you know, we're ranked pretty high. We're starting to make some impact in the percent of babies who are born too small and the number of babies who die before their first birthday. So those are good areas that we're starting to make progress in, although I will note that we do continue to see some pretty significant racial and ethnic gaps in those two indicators. But another really bright spot for us, I think, is this continued reduction in the number of births to teens. And so over this time period, we saw a nearly 30% rate reduction in births to teens, which is, you know, pretty impactful. It means that, you know, we're really targeting our services and doing something right in this area. And then lastly, I would point to the fact that we have, you know, fewer students not graduating on time. We have fewer students dropping out. And so we have more students getting their high school diplomas. And so it's important that we're also preparing these students for that next step, knowing that, you know, the jobs that are really going to provide that livable wage are those jobs that require some sort of post-secondary training or credentialing.
So what would the Michigan League for Public Policy like to see in terms of changes in state policy to address childhood poverty?
So one of the things that I think is a fairly straightforward fix that I think a lot of people can agree on is childcare, right? We want to ensure that children and families have access to affordable, high-quality childcare. This is one of those policy recommendations that's also a two-generation approach. We know that one of the best ways to help kids is to also support their families, and childcare allows kids to have access to that early learning and really trying to help them be better prepared for kindergarten, but it also works as a work support for parents, you know, to be able to stay at their jobs and go to work. And so I think that's a really big kind of policy recommendation. We can look at raising our eligibility levels for child care subsidies. Right now, Michigan is at one of the lowest levels of eligibility, so many of our families who could really benefit from this program don't qualify. And then there are a number of reforms that we can make to our current system to around reimbursement structures and increasing provider rates, because our child care providers are also some of the lowest paid people across the country.
One of the things you also note is that working a full-time minimum wage job leaves a parent with a family of three $1,657 below poverty each year. Would a raise in the minimum wage address that?
I think that's a part of it. Most definitely, we want to see people being able to, have livable wages. Another piece of that related to childcare is the fact that when somebody is working a full-time minimum wage job, they are below the poverty line, but it also takes up a good chunk of their wages to pay for childcare. So in Michigan, we see that over 38% of full-time minimum wage earnings will actually go to cover the cost of full-time childcare. And so I think the minimum wage, I think looking at subsidized childcare and how we can help all families, I think this is an issue that kind of goes across income levels. I know a lot of folks, those of us who have had to pay, for childcare, it's a really expensive cost for many families.
One other recommendation you have here is to raise the age of juvenile jurisdiction from 17 to 18 years old. Explain that for us.
So right now, Michigan is one of a handful of states that still automatically charges our 17-year-old kids as adults in our criminal justice system. I know recently, earlier this week, New York became a state that changed that. So Michigan is now even more in the minority of states that does this. What we can point to is the fact that, 17-year-old kids are not allowed to vote. They're not allowed to drop out of school. They can't join the military. There are a number of things in our legal system that do not allow for 17-year-olds to be treated as adults. Yet in our criminal justice system, we automatically treat our 17-year-old children as adults, really preventing them from being able to have access to our juvenile justice system, which is, an ideal place for rehabilitation and really ensuring that our kids are getting the treatment and the services that they need rather than being thrown into an adult correction system in an adult prison that's not going to have the services and ability to treat our children.
Alicia Guevara-Warren, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Alicia Guevara-Warren is the Kids Count in Michigan Project Director for the Michigan League for Public Policy. Links to the latest Kids Count report can be found at WMUK.org. This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans.